I was recruited by Matt. I was recruited by Mackin, and I was thinking about going there, but I'm going to tell you one reason why I didn't go there.
Well, I know the reason, but let our listeners know.
For some reason, Mackin would always have like 25 players on the varsity team.
That's right.
But I thought I made a good decision going to DeMatha. A lot of great ball players were there, and then the high school coach, Morgan Wooten. I thought he was I heard about him being a great coach, so that's why I chose DeMatha.
And I asked that question, AD, as we continue our conversation in the coach's corner with the great Adrian Dantley. I'm Coach Butch McAdams. And, AD, I asked the question because as great a player as you were, and we talked about your great work ethic and determination to improve, but it seemed like your game and Morgan Wooten's coaching style was a perfect marriage. And that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. And again.
Well, I think I would have been successful no matter what school I'd gone to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that time when we were in high school, if you were 6'5", it was very seldom that guys would be outside in the perimeter. You know, every high school team maybe only had one guy 6'5", so you know he had to play center. Barry had. Not that many opportunities to play out in the perimeter,
mm-hmm.
to work on your perimeter game, do that on my own because I really wasn't out on the perimeter that much at DeMatha.
Mm-hmm. And everyone asked me the question, man, ask Adrian, how in the world at the high school level, at the collegiate level, and especially at the NBA level at 6'5", could go down low and muscle and score against anybody. Now, you know better than I, but AD, my response is because, first of all, Adrian was stronger than most, smarter than most, and was an accurate shooter.
Well, I always study my opponents. I knew everybody in the Inner High and Catholic High School back then. Guys would always want to block somebody's shot. So one of the successful moves I had was a pump fake,
mm-hmm.
ball fake, shoulder fake. Everybody would always go for it. And once I got my opponent in foul trouble with one or two fouls in the first quarter, that was it. You know, he would have to be on the bench and and that was easy money back then.
No question. And when you got to the foul line, it was over the rim, backspin, follow through. Correct?
Over the front rim, backspin, follow through. And that was one of my goals when I played in high school, college, and pros. I always wanted to shoot 10 free throws a game. And I pretty much did that during my whole career at every level.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's another question that you probably have not been asked that often. 1973, you were Mr. Basketball nationally, meaning that he was the high school player of the year. If it were 1996 or 2000s, would Adrian Dantley had seriously consider going straight to the NBA and not Notre Dame?
I probably would have went to college a year or two, then went to high school, then went to the pros. I don't think I might have been ready at that time. You know, I'm still a 18-year-old kid, and I'm playing against grown men, even though I played real well with them. Against them in the summer times when I played against older guys, but it would have been different going directly to the pros as opposed to going to college for a while. It's a lot different now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have a lot of college players that go to the pros and they might not be successful. I mean, Kobe Bryant, as great as he was, it took him, I think, his third year for him to be a starter. You might have some exceptions with Garnett and LeBron, but I think I would have went to school at least a year or two.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Dantley is in the coach's corner with Coach Butch McAdams. And, A.D., let's talk about a great man, a mentor, a father figure, a coach to you, certainly a friend and a mentor to me, Coach Morgan Wooten. Talk about what made Morgan special as a coach and what made Morgan special as a man.
Well, he was a great guy. I probably have only cried about 10 times in his lifetime. When he got sick, I visited him. I was crying like a baby, but he was as far as the coach is concerned, he knew the fundamentals. He was organized. And you just believed in him. You just believed in him as a coach. And he got the best out of his players, even from 1 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys were better players before they got at the Masters. As far as a person, he was a great guy. He always believed in, you know, family, God. Then he would say basketball and get a great education. He was more popular as a history teacher than he was as a basketball coach. I can remember when I would go to DeMatha as a freshman, all the guys would always get psyched up for his class. We would get together in the cafeteria, Carol Holmes, Kenny Roy, all the guys. We would take bets whether we would have a quiz or not in this class.
Mm-hmm.
And the times that we studied, we never had a quiz. And the times that we did study, when we did study for his quiz, that's when he would give it to us every time. It's almost like he knew exactly when we studied for his quiz and when we did it.
Right, right. Now, you had a tremendous high school career. That 73 team, you only lost one game. And you know, Adrian, I catch it all the time with my Baltimore friends. Some are listening now. Man, take us back. What happened that night? Now, there's so many things can be said. You guys played a triple overtime that the previous night. You got in about 2 o'clock, got about 3 or 4 hours sleep. But the other side of it is that Skip Wise had a phenomenal game, and, you know, it is what it is.
You know what's funny? Every time that I take a flight from Baltimore or come back to Baltimore at the airport, some guy will always mention that game to me, even 40, 45 years later. It's amazing how they remember that game. What happened was, it was too much Skip Wise that night. We didn't know anything about number, but they had a great team, and they had our number that night. I would like to play them the best out of 7 and see what would happen, but we did a tough game the night before. We played St. John's. 3 overtimes, but then we had to play them the next day. I think it was at 12 o'clock, but you got to give the credit. They played real well. I mean, every time I caught the ball, I had 3 guys around me, and Larry Gibson and Skip Wise just had a great game.
Yes, he did.
We put Dumball on the map, I think.
Yes, no, that game did put Baltimore basketball on the map as DeMatha. In 1965, their victory over Powell Memorial, Lou Alcindor put D.C. ball on the map. And, you know, when I talk to my Baltimore friends and they talk about the Dunbar victory over DeMatha, but you know what my go-to line was, A.D., that the next year a D.C. team ended Dunbar's winning streak. And you know what team that was? St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
St. John's. In their winning streak. Now go ahead, AD.
Our league was one of the toughest in the area. When you had St. John's, Mackin, Carroll, those games were classic games. Those were great games.
Yeah, and look, I remember that 73 season. I was a young assistant coach sitting on the Mackin bench, and not just the Matha St. John's game in overtime, but Mackin and the Matha was overtime. And one of the greatest high school games I watched was when you guys defeated Carroll, I think, in double overtime at Catholic University. So you're absolutely right. 1973, the Washington Catholic League with those four teams, it was just, you know, it was like a gauntlet, so to speak.
Players, a lot of great players in the D.C. area. I'm looking forward to it. I heard you on your show last Sunday. I want to see all these guys from PG County. I want to try to compare those guys to the D.C. guys, but we have a great
test. Well, look, A.D., I always tell them that the origin of great Prince George's basketball as we know it today starts in D.C., okay? I mean, it certainly started in D.C., and then the migration comes. You go to Notre Dame, and you follow in the footsteps of other great Catholic school players such as Austin Carr, Bob Whitmore, Sid Catlett, Collis Jones. Why did you select Notre Dame? You're AD, you're the National Player of the Year. You could have gone just about anywhere. I remember Lefty Driesell saying that he wanted to recruit you to come to Maryland so you could match up at that time with David Thompson.
Yeah, I think I would. I was thinking about going to Maryland, but they had too many All-Americans up there. I don't know if I'd have been that successful going to the University of Maryland. they had a lot of players out there. I don't think Lucas and they would have been passing me the ball like they were the point guards at Notre Dame. Yeah, you had a lot of All Americans there.
So
I just wanted to go away, and I thought Notre Dame had a slot there. It was $4 million. I ended up going to Notre Dame by luck, really. I was supposed to go to North Carolina. It was always said that I was supposed to go to North Carolina. You know, I went to that basketball camp. But they did a lot of four corners. I didn't want to go there and get a lead and stall the ball. So I thought I made the right decision going to Notre Dame. Also, they had a lot of great players that attended Notre Dame, and I knew all the guys. I was familiar with all the players, so I thought that was a good choice for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk about the transition. And at every level, you defied the odds. You defied the critics. When you were in high school, oh, he's a chubby kid. He's not going to ever do anything. And you're three-time first team All-Met. All right? Then people say, well, yeah, he's doing it in high school. But when he gets to college, it's going to be a different game. You're an All-American. You win a gold medal. And then they say, well, yeah, but definitely the NBA will catch up with him. You're a Hall of Famer. You know, again, talk about the work you had to put in to make those transitions to every level.
Well, I was always motivated. I always heard about people talking about me, and that's what just motivated me at every level. I heard what all the people were saying, and that just motivated me. It made me work hard. It made me be a student of the game. It made me be a competitor, and I always thrived on playing against the best players, you know, in the D.C. area. And I guess I wasn't the prototype basketball player. You know, at that time, when I was in high school, you know, if you were big or if you were strong, you know, you weren't considered a basketball player. If you were thin and skinny, that was the thing. But now, you got everybody now lifting weights, trying to be big or be strong or be quicker, be faster. And I was doing that back then. So
You were one of the first basketball players. You were one of the first players that I knew that lifted on a regular basis, and I first learned about I think it may have been the Nautilus or one of the machines I first learned about, because you you were using it as a part of your workout routine.
Always did that back then. I think that's what always gave me the edge. I always say that the one thing that I had over a lot of players, I think I was always in better condition. I mean, I would play games and guys would shut me out the first 2.5 quarters, play a boxing one, and I always tell them, hey, fourth quarter, you're going to get tired. In the fourth quarter, I might get 16 in the fourth quarter. So I was always patient and always would come through at the end when I knew my conditioning would help me during the game.
Now, you talk about historic games, and you talk about that Dunbar game that put Dunbar and Baltimore basketball on the map, but you participated, but this time on a victorious side, in a historic game at the collegiate level. You ended UCLA's winning streak. I think it was 88 straight games, and you were in the midst of that. Share that experience with our listeners.
Yes, that was a great time. I think when we played UCLA, they were ranked number one. We were ranked number two. I can remember when we played UCLA and Bill Walton was the team. You know how you change practices and you buy guys. I can remember Bill Walton today. He was whistling the Notre Dame fight song. It was amazing. When we beat him, I can remember him crying. I said, you going to sing the fight song now? You going to whistle the fight song now? But
oh, boy. Yeah, that was a great game. I was watching.
And you talking about guys talking trash. I mean, they were talking trash, foul language. I was surprised at being, you know, the John Wooden coached the great UCLA team. But ended up breaking their streak, and every time I see Bill, he always get mad at me and say, you know, you broke out our winning streak. But that was a fun time.
Yeah, that was a great story. He said he was whistling the Notre Dame song, but after the game, he wasn't whistling too much.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, Adrian Dantley's on our Newsmaker line. And, Adrian, man, you go to the NBA. Your first-round pick, I believe, the sixth pick overall. Now, talk about that next transition from college All-American now to the NBA, because I recall you got in even better shape then, man.
I'll tell you a funny story about getting drafted by Buffalo Braves. Every time I went to class, it would be this girl. She would always be talking to me all the time. I mean, throughout the whole year. And I was saying to myself, why does she keep talking to me all the time, right? So anyway, at the end of my junior year at Notre Dame, this same girl still talking to me. She said, I'm going to let you know, my father's going to draft you. He's the general manager of the Buffalo Braves.
Wow.
I said, oh, really? And good thing I was nice to her, huh? But I got drafted by Buffalo, and quite an experience. Had like three different coaches my first year. Played with some great players. We had co-owners of a basketball team. Say one owner might go to Europe, the other owner might trade a player. I went my first year, but I was still focused on basketball. And I would say to myself, I'm in a situation. You still got to do your job on the basketball. My rookie year, my Moses Malone, Bob McAdoo, myself in the front court, and Brandon Smith and Ernie DiGregorio. The owner traded Moses to Houston, then McAdoo ended up getting traded. Maybe it was an interesting year.
And you were Rookie of the Year, I recall, correct?
Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you how like NBA scouts are. NBA scouts, they want that prototype basketball player. If I'd have been like 6'7", I might have been the number one pick. But that year, the number one pick was John Lucas. He was the number one pick. And the second pick was the second pick was Scott May.
Scott May
Richard
out of
Washington
Indiana.
Was the third. Yeah, Indiana. Richard Washington was the third pick from UCLA. John Douglas was the fourth pick from Alabama. And Wally Walker, he got hot during the ACC tournament, and he was the fifth player pick. So those were the five guys that got drafted ahead of me.
Wow. And, you know, Adrian, I would always look, and we would say in D.C., man, our boy AD can't catch a break. And finally, it appeared that you were with the right program and ready to win a championship. And then this is me talking now, the pettiness and the selfishness kicked in Detroit and the Bad Boys. Share with us as much as you can that experience.
It was a good experience. When I came to Detroit, they were a young basketball team. They needed a guy to kind of get them over the hump to play against the Celtics. During that time when I was there, that's when the younger guys, they was growing up. They was about to take that next level. And then I got traded to Dallas. So everybody know what that's all about. That's like old news. It's funny everywhere. And just like the Dunbar situation. Whenever I travel, somebody always bring up Detroit. Even 35 years later, it's amazing how people remember what went on at that time. But, you know, when you got people who can run the ship, make the orders, there's really not anything you can do. So I had a lot of bumps in my career, but every time I went on the basketball court, no matter where I was, I always tried to do the best I could.
And you did the best. Your very best. And doing your Hall of Fame introduction speech, I'm paraphrasing here, AD, but you made a statement and you said, hey, this is something that no coach, no general manager, or no player can take away. Correct?
No, they can't trade me. You can't trade me once you get in the Hall of Fame.
No, they can't do that. They can't do that. Now, confirm or deny this rumor. I heard that Pistons offered you a championship ring, and you said you didn't want it. True or false statement?
Oh, that's false. I'm sure that they wanted to offer me a ring, but
I couldn't hear you that time. Okay.
I said, no, there were some rumors about they wanted to give me a ring, but I wasn't accepted it anyway. But they never offered me a ring once I got traded from Detroit. I don't know where that came from.
You once said you played arguably one of the more difficult skill-based positions in all the sport, the three, the small forward. And I remember you telling me once, he said, every night you're going up against an all-star, be it a Larry Bird, a Dominique Wilkins, a Dr. J, a Scottie Pippen. Talk about what it was like playing the three position in the NBA back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, it was a nightmare every night. I mean, I was a rookie. I can remember when I was a young kid, Cassie Russell was my idol. And when I played against him in my rookie year, how much trash he was talking to me. So that was one guy right there. A lot of people probably don't even remember Cassie Russell, great player. And I think he was the number one pick.
Yeah.
You know, play against him, you play Jimmy McMillan, was with the Lakers. You know, play against, next night you play against Bobby Dandridge.
Yeah.
You know? Then the next night you play against Bill Bradley. I kind of beat him to death. I remember him when I was a little kid. He couldn't play at that time. That was his 11th and 12th year in the league. He said, "Oh, please, Adrian, take it easy on me." You know what I mean? Play against Rick Barry, These are guys that I idolized when I was a young kid. And here I am against these guys, and then you play against Dr. J and George McGinnis. You know, and then when the younger guys come in, you're playing against, you know, Bird, you know, Alex English. People don't know about him. Great score.
You know,
Bernard King. You got Aguil, Larry Bird. It wasn't, that Kelly DeFugo, even though people might say he might not play good defense, he still could get 30 on you. So you had to play defense against him. So,
that's right, yeah.
A lot of great small forwards that.
Mm-hmm. Have you watched the documentary on Jordan, The Last Dance? And if so, give us your reflections on Michael Jordan. Because when I'm watching that, his work ethic and his drive to excellence is very similar to yours, A.D.
Yeah, well, you know, best player to ever, you know, play the game. There's nothing you can really say. It's a good documentary. I don't know all. You're getting one side of it, you're getting his side of it. But I've been watching it. He talk a lot of trash. I tell you one part I like was when he was sitting in the corner with the baseball bat. And he was saying, a lot of trash when they up. But they don't talk trash when it's 0-0. But
I like that as well.
Good.
Yeah, that was real. See, good.
Thing, I didn't know he smoked as many cigars as he did during practice. That was pretty interesting.
yeah, that was. Now, now when you were playing, now, and anybody know you, man, you are still a health, I don't want to say a health nut, but just a health advocate. Look like you could play today. I'm in pretty good shape as well, but I'll see you in Whole Foods, and you'll look at my basket and say, "Man, you better stop eating that chicken." You know, but so did guys kind of get on you when you didn't want to go to the club and drink a beer or smoke a cigar or have a cocktail?
Well, one thing he said in his documentary was true: was when I came to the NBA and I played up at the Sunny Hill basketball game and all these pros were coming in, I couldn't believe how many guys were smoking cigarettes and drinking beer after the game. It was like mind-boggling to me. He was correct about that when he came to the league. That was the same thing that happened to me when I was in the league. I couldn't believe it.
I remember you telling me once that you would look around and say, okay, he was in the club last night. He was in the club last night. I got him in the third quarter.
Well, I used to have guys that would give me the scouting report, and I would tell them, it was certain clubs in wherever we went. I was like, let me know who was at the club the night before. And then that would be my, that would be my ammunition. There's no way he's going to compete against me when he's been out, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So I used to love doing that when I was a player.
Yeah. And then yet another transition for Adrian Dantley from all-star, future Hall of Fame player to the bench as a coach. Now, how difficult was that?
It was the players are different than the players today have a lot more leverage over the coaches. What I was surprised when I was coaching, it was amazing how you couldn't criticize the player that much, or he might be gone. That's what I was really that's what really got to me. I couldn't believe it, but. You gotta get along with the players, but it was fun, a good experience, and it was something that I would never forget.
Yeah, And then, AD, you've always been an advocate. And before we go, we have to talk about this. When you were a player, you would always try to advise the younger players, look, be wise with your money. Take care of your money. Because when you retire, you know what, you want to have a comfortable life. Talk about that and how some players would adhere to your advice and other players would, as you said, would start running when they see you coming.
Well, every time I would see, even when I was assistant coach at Denver, and every year when we would come back, I would always ask the guys, because I knew what the guys made, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would always say to them, you got $1 million in the bank, you got your house paid off. They would look at me like I was crazy. They were like, oh, here he come again, you know what I mean? But when I was young, I always read about all the great athletes. They were broke at the end of their career. And I said that if I ever get a chance, that's not going to happen to me. You know, you read about Joe Louis. You know all the
sure.
players play the game. They have these specials on all the informal football players, you know, baseball, basketball players. You see them on TV all the time. So I just made sure that that wasn't going to happen to me. But you know, it's very difficult. You know, you got guys that be successful, make a lot of money, and they take care of a lot of people, take care of their friends, and next thing you know, at the end of their career, they broke. I remember I heard your show, and you had the one guy, the football player, and he was running it down on, $1 million, not really like $1 million. $1 million is really only $600,000. You know, you got to pay your taxes, you got to pay your accountant. So, what was his name? Anyway, it was. He gave you a rundown on what.
Yeah.
When you do make that kind of money, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then finally,
only thing I miss is I don't make the money that these players make today. I'm jealous.
Oh my gracious, AD! If you were coming out today, man, what? I don't know if they could pay you, man. I don't know if they can pay you.
The NBA is doing so well. They made the collective bargaining agreement. The players had to get 50% of the pay, and so therefore, that's why you see all these players making the money they make. Not only the top five, even the guys from 8 to 12 make huge money. So
mm-hmm.
NBA is doing great.
Yes, the NBA. Is doing great. And then finally, I laugh because you got as much airtime, national airtime, when people discovered that you were a crossing guard than as a Hall of Fame basketball player. And I said to people, anybody that knows Adrian knows that he's not broke.
Well,
talk about that experience, AD.
Somebody texted me an article yesterday talking about all the players where they work in the day. So it must have been I must have been like 10 articles so far about me being a crossing guard. Anyway, you hear rumors like that. I can remember one time I was working down at Georgia Avenue, and this guy came by me and he said, yeah, what it feel like working out here now? So I always get funny remarks from people when I start working. But, you know, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy getting up in the morning, seeing the kids. You know, I enjoy refereeing basketball games. So it's something I've been doing. I've been doing that. Crossing guard and refereeing now for about 8 years. Can you believe that?
Well,
and,
look, man.
I keep telling everybody.
hey,
I keep telling
hey,
everybody
AD.
I'm going to break. Yeah, good.
No. I was going to just
I keep telling
with you.
I keep telling people I'm a I keep telling paper I'm going to break the record for being a crossing guard. We got a crossing guard. She'd been a crossing guard for 38 years. She retired, so I always be joking to all of them. I said, I'm going to break that record.
and look, I was going to mess with you. Some of my friends who are still playing in that, I guess it's the 60 and over adult league, and you referee, they say, man, AD doesn't call nothing. No foul, no blood, no foul. Is that true?
Those guys, first of all, they was moving like a turtle. I mean, they both, I tell them, if I was to call every foul, it wouldn't be a basketball game because they foul on every possession. So, but it's fun to do the game. I enjoy refereeing, especially the 12 and under kids when they can really play. I really enjoy doing it, the 12 and under. But I do all the ages groups. 70 and older. They won't let me do any WCAC games. They say it's a conflict of interest. Can you believe
that?
Yeah,
you may lean too heavily towards the stats.
I officiate everywhere else but the WCAC.
Well, Adrian, look, man, this has been an honor. Look, we had the technical difficulty earlier, but it was well worth it. And I always enjoy talking basketball with you. You are definitely my favorite player. When I coached, I always worked at the post moves and would always say, now, this is what Adrian Dantley does, or Adrian wouldn't have done that. And I used you as the model, and I know other coaches as well. Hey, Adrian, 10 seconds, man. Leave our listeners with some words of wisdom.
Well, I would tell all the young kids, you know, get a great education. That's very important. And everybody, really, you know, with this COVID-19, the one thing they always talk about is high blood pressure, you know, diabetes, all the things you can mention. It's very important that everybody take care of themselves, be healthy. And that's really important at this time, what's going on today.
Well, look, man, if you see me out there, you know, getting my cardio on in Georgia Avenue, just blow the horn. Or if I see you in Whole Foods, you know, we got to practice social distancing. But I'll just give you a fist bump in the air.
Good working with you. Good talking to you. Always enjoy talking to you and appreciate you. You're one of my biggest fans and always enjoyed our friendship way back.
That's right. But we go back like Cadillac seats. Thank you, AD.
Take care.
All right, folks. And that was the legendary Adrian Dantley. And that's just one of many of the legends and the trailblazers and the pioneers that will appear on In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner. And once again, want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Services, for over 80 years, just the very best in family funeral care. They're located 600 Kennedy Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Give them a call at 202-829-9000. That's 202-829-9000. And ask for Randolph Horton, my brother. We call him Reds Bowman. Also, if you're in need of any dental care, it is Dr. Edward T. Buford. Dr. Edward T. Buford is located conveniently right next to Ben's Chili Bowls, 1209 U Street, 202-667-8818, and the Athletic Republic, the old run and shoot. When things open up, that's the place to be. They're located 6417 Marlboro Pike, District Heights, Maryland. And also want to thank, as always, my main man, Rick Hampton of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. They are the partner of In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner. And we'll talk to you next time, so make good.